Hey Anthony, how are you?
Hey.
Sorry, the fireplace went out and I had to go outside also to get wood, so it took longer.
It's okay, I had a few things to do as well.
Okay.
So you were saying, well, to reiterate for anyone who might be listening that isn't you or I, we were discussing the worthiness of the Steph's Table thread. And I said that I think that your energies might be better spent speaking to people who are, one, more responsive to what you're trying to say, and two, aren't so far along the road of already improving their emotional handling and creating good relationships in their life. And you said that you're not too sure that people on FDR are on that road, unless I happen to think that digging themselves into a hole so that they would need to climb out of it again is a necessary step. So I'm interested in hearing about this hole and what you mean by that.
Yeah, it's you know, similar to the experience I had with starting to think in terms of people being evil or good, and how that progressively cut me off from one person after another in my entourage, and eventually I ended up with no one left that wasn't evil, except for my kids. So, and I see that unfortunately happening also on different threads at FDR. People who you know, say that they are lonely and there is no one where they feel that they can connect with this person because so many people are irrational, or I mean, lots of lonely people. Don't you agree with that?
Right. Okay. Interesting. So let me just recap and make sure I got you right. What you're saying is, in your experience, when you sort of had moralistic thinking and you would ascribe wrongness to people for certain behaviours, you found yourself feeling increasingly isolated in your social circle until, if I get you right, everyone sooner or later did something which made you ascribe wrongness and badness to them except for your kids. And you found that experience very alienating. And when you look on the boards at FDR, you see people who are complaining of a similar loneliness, or at least one that reminds you of theirs, it reminds you of your own prior situation, because they are finding fault with everyone around them, mm-hmm. to the degree where they feel like they can't connect with them at all anymore.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes, yes. And
go on.
No, and it seems that the main point of contact with someone else that many people at FDR have is other people on the boards. And
sure.
I find that sad, you know, because there's millions of human beings out there who I don't see them as evil at all. And yeah.
So, yes, it seems a shame if people's only point of contact, if people they really connect to, is on an internet forum, because there's a whole world of people out there that we could gain something from associating with, and you think it's a shame for them not to get that.
Yeah.
Sure. So, in answer to your question, which was, do I agree? It's interesting because when you put it like that, I sort of do agree. I don't know if the reason why people are lonely is because they are thinking moralistically, or if it's because they have not developed certain skills which might help them connect to people better, but those might sort of be tied in. It's hard for me to say because I've always been pretty good at talking to strangers. So, but when I sort of learned some skills, some of which are associated with NBC, like reflective listening, which is called receiving empathically in NBC, but it goes by other names, active listening, reflective listening. I first came across it in the book, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen, Listen So Kids Will Talk. Those skills, I feel, open up people to having more enriching conversations with others.
Yes.
And being able to express your preferences without moralizing, I agree, is very important because it's always better to say, could you go back out and get the potatoes because I need them for the cooking, then I can't believe you forgot the potatoes again, or something like that. So, wow, that was a really convoluted way of saying I can sort of see where you're coming from. I guess I needed to think it through in that form. Really, I think the point I was digging to is one that I've been meaning to bring up on FDR at some point, which is sort of that I disagree with Steph when he says that if you're really into this, you shouldn't be friends with statists.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, first of all, if everyone who's not a statist only is friends with state abolitionists, then we look like a bit of a cult. We don't really look rational. We look like a cult, or they only hang out with people who agree with the same thing as them, etc. And second of all, I know some really good people who aren't necessarily of the same political persuasion as me.
Yes.
They certainly enjoy talking about politics when it comes up, and they're receptive and interested in my ideas. They don't necessarily agree, but they're certainly not bad people. These can be people who are quite interested in volunteering or helping or going in an environmental restoration project and being of real use to other people. And I think that's not a good way to go, because you can connect with people on common ground.
Yes. But this common ground reduces to nothing if you insist that they agree with you on you know, what's right and what's wrong, and if you expect and if you demand actually that people change their ways in order to have a conversation with you.
Sure. So
nobody likes demands.
So if I get you right, what you're saying is that in order to make for common ground, you have to start from a point of not insisting that they have the same ideas of what is right and what is wrong. And I'm not sure if I'm lost here, but you need to come, what is your contention, that you need to come from a point of what sort of listening to what their views are first, or just I'm sorry, you'll need to make yourself clear. I'm not sure I've got you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm saying that.
Sorry, I could agree that, yeah, if you insist that they have to have the same moral values as you, then you're in for some trouble, because this conversation doesn't even get started.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you thus far, yeah. But obviously they're going to say, well, you know, you can run the ideas by them, they can test them out. If they continue not to make any grounds or make any change of mind after a while, then you know that they've not got the same values as you and you should jump ship.
Mm-hmm.
What's your response to that?
My response is that because of the way that moralistic judgment works, it does not allow for mistakes. That's the main problem that I see with it, is that in life, you know, we're all imperfect, we all make mistakes, and if I thought using moralistic judgment the UPB way, you know, somebody is not they did this thing which is contrary to my principles, and so this means that tried to discuss it with them, and they said something that to me proves that they weren't interested in being rational. I just cannot talk with somebody who's evil like that, and that's the way of thinking that that I had, and now I see that it is this way of thinking that unfortunately for me at the time I couldn't see that it does not match actual reality. In reality, people are not evil. You know, they can be making mistakes, and by insisting on no mistakes, never, you know, I ended up cutting off everybody.
Right.
So
okay.
It is the lack of any provisions for mistakes in moralistic thinking that leads to disconnection from everybody at some point, for me.
Right, okay. I'm not going to paraphrase everything you've just said. I'll anticipate the response that I think you would get to having said that, which is, no, Mark, we totally understand that everyone makes mistakes. What we're saying is, if you ask someone for directions and they give you wrong directions, and you come back and say, hey, you know, look at the map, you told me to go the wrong way. If they say, oh gosh, you're right, sorry, let me make it up to you, then you know that they realize they've made a mistake. But if they get all defensive and start calling you names and things like that, then, you know, they've got a guilty conscience, and either they don't acknowledge that they've made a mistake, or they knew that they were giving you wrong directions the whole time. And those are the people that we're talking about. We're not talking about anyone that's just made a mistake. Everyone makes mistakes. Could you yes. respond?
Yes, yes. And I agree that... it is possible to make this class of mistake that you're talking about, you know, I believe that there are other classes of mistakes, higher order mistakes Like for example, or hidden mistakes, more precisely. For instance, imagine this person who gave you wrong directions is afraid to admit that he does not know how to read a map, you know, and that because during the time that he grew up, he never had an occasion to learn to read a map. You know, maybe also each time they went on a road trip with his family or whatever, maybe two or three times it happened that he got the map and he made a mistake reading the map, and then his siblings or cousins or whatever got really mad at him because of this. You know, it was a honest mistake at the time. And so now this person has the belief that they're just bad at reading maps, you know, but they still feel obligated to give directions to anybody who asks them for directions. And so they're kind of stuck in a place where, you know, they feel they have to give directions. And also they know that they cannot give directions because they can't read maps. And they cannot admit this because they're ashamed of admitting that. You know, they think that every respectable person is supposed to read maps and they want to be respectable. Do you see how this kind of mistake in their thinking can cause the behavior that you then interpret as them being somebody you don't want to interact with because they don't recognize that they've made a mistake?
Okay, lovely extension of the metaphor. Let's continue with that. What if this is a person who's come back and said, look, this is how you read a map, and tried to show them several times how to read the map, and the person still will insist on not giving them good directions or not even taking directions on how to read the map.
Yes. And, you know, I was there myself, not with reading maps, but with other things. And for me, I could not accept, if going back to the map metaphor, I would have shouted at you that of course I know how to read the map. Don't try to tell me how to read the map. Of course I know. You know, when I did not, because I was so ashamed of admitting that I didn't know how to read the map, that it was just impossible for me to admit. My self-esteem Right. was so low that I just could not afford to admit to a mistake.
Okay, good stuff. So let's move on then to the practical question of how you expect to get through to this. Don't be ridiculous, of course I know how to read the map thinker, and get them to admit they don't know how to read the map and start reorientating themselves towards some effective map reading. What are your approaches?
Okay, I didn't understand the last part of your sentence. Sorry.
What I'm asking is, how do you approach dealing with such a person?
Right, yes.
Before you go on, I'm just going to say, like, in my life, if I need to offer a criticism, or need to ask someone to change their behavior, I try to do so in such a way that, you know, doesn't ascribe wrongness to them. In the same way that if you're in a restaurant and you say to the waitress or waiter, you know, this isn't the food I ordered, or this isn't the dish I want, you hope they're going to turn around and say, okay, no problem, what else can I get you? what else can I get you? And that's, I want to give that person the best possible opportunity to not react defensively, but just say, okay, what else can I get you? And usually for me, the best way to do that is to say, you know, I'd like you to do this instead. I understand you're trying to do this, but I'd like you to do this. Is that congruent with your worldview? In short.
I have trouble understanding the question. I'm sorry.
Did you understand my example?
I understand that you are in a restaurant and you the person from the restaurant brings you one kind of food and you don't like it, and they try to find out from you what other food you would prefer. Is that right?
Sure. So that's not, that is part of the metaphor, but it's not exactly what I was getting at. Mm-hmm. If I turn to the waitress and say, oh my God, I can't believe you brought me this disgusting crap, you're a terrible human being, etc. Mm-hmm. It's not really likely to turn around and say, what else can I get you?
Exactly.
But if I say, I'm really sorry, but I don't like this dish. Could you exchange it? She's more likely to say, what else can I get you?
Okay, yes, I understand. I understand. And how do you map that to the argument that is going on the thread then?
Could you be more specific?
I don't understand how that relates to the thread at FDR.
Well, I was just really asking. I was just really pointing that out as a prelude to asking you what are your approaches to sort of dealing with someone, because you know we might have gone to a restaurant where you say, look, I'm really sorry, but I don't like this dish. Can I choose something else off the menu? And they're like, well, I'm still going to charge you for the drinks and food you ordered already, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, even if we were like, well, I didn't order that dish in the first place, you brought me the wrong dish. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but, you know, you're in my restaurant, so... you know, if you want another dish, I'm charging you for both and whatever. If this is the reaction that people are getting, what is your approach? And obviously you don't need to use the metaphor. You know, in your own words, how will you approach reforming such a person? Because obviously a lot of people on the board believe rightly or wrongly, and my belief, the jury's out on this one, that these people can't be reformed.
Okay.
What's your approach?
I understand. So the waitress is being really unreasonable, right?
Sure.
Okay. I understand now. So,
because I just never go to that restaurant again.
Yeah.
And that's what people on FDR say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you got that treatment from the waitress,
yes,
and you called the manager over, and yes, the manager said, no, I agree with the waitress.
Uh-huh.
You got the dish, so you pay.
Uh-huh.
People on FDR are saying, well, I'm never going to go to that restaurant again.
Yeah.
So what's your argument?
Well, it's a
your approach
in a restaurant like that. I would.
It's only a metaphor. It's only a metaphor.
Yeah, Well, see, usually with the people, the stuff that we're talking about at FDR, it's not people you don't know, like waitresses in a restaurant. It's family members, you know, or friends, people who you have invested a lot more of time and energy to be in a relationship with, and they're much more important to you, I suppose, because of
Sure,
that.
sure.
Yeah.
But Mark, the argument's going to be, well, then that's even worse. If a waitress treats me that way, it's fine because I don't know her. But if someone who I've depended on, if someone really close to me treats me that way, that's worse because I know them well and I shouldn't associate with them. But let's not argue on the point of whether you should associate with them or not. Let's hear your solution to someone who's got that attitude that is very close to you, your solution that is going to help reform them.
Well, it's not really a reform. Assuming that it is going to cost you to cut contact with this person, right? I mean, your motivation is that you're going to lose something by not seeing this person anymore, right? Whereas with the waitress, I mean, there are other restaurants, you don't care as much. If you are losing, if you are going to lose something that is important to you, it makes sense, doesn't it, that you would want to avoid losing that? And so you would try to get the relationship with this person back and turn it into something that is satisfying for you, right? If it's
Right,
possible. And
right. But sorry, before you go on,
sure.
don't people on FDR and Steph say that sort of dethroning, for example, should be the last resort, and by all means try everything you can first to
Yes,
get the
yes.
relationship back on track. But if it doesn't work, then you should remove yourself from the situation, which is damaging to you.
Yes, right, yes. And that brings us to the question of methods and theory, of what can be done to improve relationships. What I've learned from NBC is, in my eyes, a much, much more effective method for rekindling relationships than the methods and the ideas that I learned from Steph's books and podcasts.
Okay.
So there's this, there are different methods, and some of them I'm convinced give much better results than anything that I've seen at FDR.
Okay. So what you're saying is, well, there are some methods presented at FDR. You don't think they are the most effective,
That's right.
and that people could be given better tools to try and salvage the relationship before, say, taking a drastic step like dethroning.
Yes.
Before we go on to discuss those methods, which I think it would be natural for us to do, would you agree that if someone tries NVC very assiduously, gets good at it, sees benefits in, say, their friendships or their romantic relationships, but there's some people who, despite using it with, they don't see any improvement in, and they leave, every time they associate with those people, they leave drained, feeling worse, never better. Would you agree at that point it's perhaps better for them to cut off contact?
Yes, in some situations I can see this, yes. If it is really draining, then yes, it makes sense to cut contact. And maybe not forever, you know, maybe it can be for months, years, maybe, and until the other solutions are found. It depends on it's I'm not sure. It's a matter of how important it is, you know, to me to keep this relationship versus lose it. And it's like you were saying, in some situations, if it's just too much trouble for me, then yes, I will let go of the relationship. But if it is one that is really incredibly valuable, then for me, then I will want to try and try and try again until you know, I maybe find a new way to resolve this this conflict.
Right. Okay, I'm glad we got that cleared up, because I know on the boards many people, including Steph, have expressed a concern that NVC doesn't have a off switch. It doesn't have a kill switch. Whereas I'm of the view that it does, because first of all, Marshall Rosenberg encourages that people don't give or do things unless they do it from the heart because they want to do it.
Yes.
And secondly, because in the short book, Being Me Loving You, Marshall Rosenberg in a role play says to a client, if you don't want to talk about this stuff, you know, have these sort of emotional conversations, I think it's better if we have an NVC breakup, because I need to be able to have these conversations. So it does have a kill switch. It's not necessarily made explicit, but I believe that it is there.
I agree with you.
So I just wanted to clear that up for when this podcast gets shared. I think beyond that, the main contention that people are going to come with to what you just said is, well, you know, when it comes down to it, we don't really find these relationships that valuable. And we find them damaging. And, you know, we want to get the hell out of there. We just, maybe we don't have the financial independence to cut off. Maybe we don't have the support network to cut off. Maybe we've not got everything we need in our lives in place to cut off, but we want to.
Yes.
So, have you got anything to add on that point?
I agree with you that it is up to each person to decide for themselves, you know, what works best for them.
So we're not saying that necessarily everyone can fix every relationship. Your contention is that people could accrue some better tools for improving relationships. And what benefits do you think they could get if they practice the methods which we're going to talk about shortly? What benefits do they think they can get out of these relationships once they use the methods?
Well, what benefits they're seeking in the case of parents, for example, You know, with the example with Steph and his mother, from what I understand, you know, even though he says that he's given up and that he will not seek contact with her for anything, if I remember correctly. Because I hear him talking about his childhood and how much he suffered at her hands for so long, because he does this so often, I get the impression that it is not over for him. He has not made peace with this part of his history, you know, and it could be, that's the impression I get, that he would get a lot of satisfaction if it was possible, you know. To get from his mother what he wishes he would have gotten when he was a child.
Right.
And if there is a chance that he might get maybe not all of this, you know, but at least a part of it, I think he would be happier as a result. And I think he wants to be happier.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with you on this point. Obviously, we need to run it by Steph. But I happen to be of the opinion, and also by listening to his podcast called On Restitution, where he talks about even if his mum came back and did apologize, etc., and said he'd be like, well, okay, you know, he still wouldn't want to associate with her because, as he puts it, it's a day late and a dollar short. It's too late for it to actually help him in practical terms.
Yes.
I also happen to think that Steph sort of is as over it, in inverted commas, as he needs to be. I don't think he talks about it because it still troubles him. I think he talks about it to exemplify to other people the kind of things he's talking about. He usually uses his mother's behavior to illustrate a point, not to pontificate on how badly wronged he was. But in the interest of moving this conversation forward to something that people can relate to better, supposing we weren't talking about Steph's mum.
Okay.
Supposing we were talking in the abstract about someone, to be charitable, someone who had a parent who they were having a lot of trouble with, a parent who was maybe nice some of the time, and they liked certain qualities of that parent, but overwhelmingly they found that parent extremely difficult to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is the kind of person you're talking about when you say whatever they want to get out of this relationship, if they can fix that relationship, they're in a situation where they've got a relationship that they would want to fix if they could. Right? Right?
Yes.
And you're saying that on top of that, the methods that FDR provides with that person with or have in the past,
mm-hmm,
may be of some utility to some people, but you certainly don't think they are the best that a person could get, correct?
Correct.
So let's talk about methods. Let's talk about what methods you think can help people.
Okay. The first point is that it is as far as I can tell, you know, impossible to love and to hate someone at the same time. It's one or the other. And so if you're trying to connect with somebody that you hate, it's not going to work. And the same goes for moralistic judgment. If you judge that a person is evil, you're not going to be able to think of this person as someone you want to have contact with. Do you agree with that?
Sure. I'm not sure about the love and hate at the same time, but we'll overlook that for another conversation.
Okay. Maybe I could use more specific words for that, because those are have very broad meanings.
Sometimes you wouldn't hate someone so badly if you didn't love them so much.
Yeah.
Because the fact that you had love for them gives them capacity to hurt you worse.
Yes.
Than if you didn't care about them.
Yes. So maybe
let's go with the moralistic thinking point. I think you've done well enough.
Okay.
Right. Your idea is that when you have an idea in your head that someone is bad, wrong, evil, or any other negative judgment, inconsiderate, selfish, narcissistic, any negative judgment, your contention is that it's impossible to, or extremely difficult to...
I think it's impossible.
Okay.
Because you know, you're in a defense mode, and you're trying to protect yourself from this person, not open up to them. And those are incompatible psychological states.
Right. So what you're saying is you want to take these judgments out the picture.
And
one might say, right, before we go on, I just want to take up the point that was raised on the forum which I made, which was so as to say, well, when someone says, for example, someone's selfish, they mean by a certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is, I've observed this person to act in a series of ways, you know, putting their interests before those of other people when I didn't deem it appropriate to do so. And then the shortcut is just say to call them selfish.
Mm-hmm.
You want to remove that judgment from the equation.
Any judgment that is that implies wrongness in some way.
Okay.
But judgments on whether or not what this person is doing is bringing you satisfaction or not, those
right.
are perfectly valid and necessary in order to live, I think.
Okay, so what you want is to take it out of the objective and into the subjective. So instead of having the judgment, you're selfish, you instead have the value judgment, which is, I'm not getting what I need from you.
Yes. That's closer to what I think, yes.
Well, why don't you tell me what you think in your words rather than letting me do it for you?
I think it is very close, you know. But there is some to really understand these methods. There are some a little bit of knowledge that is required to understand them. If we don't have this knowledge, it's difficult to understand the methods. The way of thinking about what we need from in order to live in NVC, you know, it's based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Is that we have multiple needs, and when saying that a person is evil or good, it doesn't specify which needs of ours are getting satisfied by what the person is doing or not. So basically, in NVC, we have about seven categories of needs, and in each of these categories are more sub divisions of you know, which specific needs we have. And so if in interacting with a person we recognize that such and such of our needs are not getting satisfied, then we, becoming aware of this opens the door to getting those getting satisfaction for these needs. If we're not even aware that we have them, if all we have is a general feeling that something's not right, it's going to be more difficult to get satisfaction than if we are aware of exactly what it is that we need, and then we can ask for that.
Right. So your suggestion is that if instead of ascribing a judgment to the way that a person behaves in general terms, such as selfish or inconsiderate, all the way up to evil, we instead focus on what we're experiencing, name it, and dig a little deeper in order to try and discover what is it that we are not getting that we want, very specifically. That will open the door for us to communicate in such a way as to help us or give us a better chance of soliciting compliance from someone, even if they're very difficult.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that's one half of the process. Well, not the process of the view of the situation. The other half of viewing the situation is to think of the other person as having the same set of needs, you know, that can be either satisfied or not satisfied at each moment in time. And if we do the same work for them that we do for ourselves, trying to determine which of our needs we want to be satisfied. If we do the same work for the other person, if we try to get from them what it is, which needs of theirs it is that they would like to have satisfied, then we get to a point where it becomes possible to look for ways to satisfy both people's needs.
Right. Okay. So what we're coming to here is, if you're able to tune in with yourself and find out what you're not getting from the situation that you'd like to, that improves your capacity to think of the other person as that, as not getting what they need out of the situation. And if I can extend your thinking to what I presume you mean for what you've said about Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of wants. So supposing all we want is for this particular need of us to be met, maybe it's the need for to be interacted with in a harmonious way with a family member. Perhaps what we're saying is that family member doesn't have a more primitive need met, like maybe they don't feel safe in their environment or something like that, and they don't feel supported, and that's making it impossible for them to be considerate of your needs.
Yes.
And your suggestion is, if we try, say, empathic, receiving empathetically, as it's called in NVC, if we can listen reflectively and try and identify their needs, then maybe by doing so, they will not feel in a hostile environment anymore, and they'll start to feel like more willing to meet our own needs.
Yes, yes.
Is that what you mean to suggest?
Yes, that's the general outline of how it goes, yes.
Okay. Would you like to continue and say how this might work for people who are not convinced that this approach of empathizing with their abusers, as they will have that judgment, one that I'm not particularly adverse to using myself in terms of describing behavior towards children for the convenience of that. Would you want to speak about that?
Yes. Before that, if it's okay, all right with you, I want to point out that, like any other skill, this one takes time to learn, you know, and it takes practice, and it can be, just like anything else, difficult to learn, especially difficult to learn well enough that you can apply it with someone you have a long history of getting into fights with, for example. You know, somebody who really knows how to push your buttons. And that requires quite a bit of
presence of mind.
Of knowing yourself and of being aware of those triggers and having practiced giving yourself empathy, as they say in NVC, so that when you notice that you are starting to be triggered, you are able to stop for a second and you know, take a deep breath and realize what's happening, connect with yourself, and then once you've given yourself some kindness and some compassion for how hard it is to be in this situation, then maybe you're ready to turn your attention back outwards toward the other person and listen to what they're saying with being calm again yourself.
And you're of the belief that even with someone who has been seriously abusive, this could eventually result in creating a harmonious and enriching relationship with that person.
That's the hope. And it may not be in some situations it might be too difficult, you know, for a pair of people to achieve on their own. Perhaps they would find it easier by having a third person present who is well versed in these techniques and in this consciousness, this way of viewing interactions between people. Sometimes this can be necessary, yes.
Right. So that leads to sort of, well, there'll be two questions then. The first is loosely related, is very related, I'm not sure how important it is, but there'll be an objection that some people will have, the person in mind would never be willing to have someone come in and mediate. So that wouldn't be possible. I don't know if that requires a response, really. I think more important, more prescient to the minds of those on the board is the question, well, you know, why should I put all the work in? In fact, why should I even try and empathize with the abuser, especially, say, a parent, because it's their job to empathize with me, yes, not my job.
Yes. Right.
And maybe if they put some effort in, then I'm willing to do a bit more work. But if they've not put any effort in, well, why should I be the one that has to do the work?
Right. Yes. The reason for this is that it is you who wants something out of the interaction, not them, apparently, you know, or maybe they also want something. But if you want to get something from them, then it makes sense to me, at least, that you would want to invest some effort into getting what you want.
And you want to have the best tools that are available to you.
Yes.
In doing that.
Yes.
And your view is that the best tools available will are those that are prescribed by NBC?
At the moment, yes, I don't know of anything better than those tools in NBC.
Okay, great. I think this has been a good conversation. I think it's worth sharing. I think before we do that, why don't you exemplify from your own life, if you're willing to do so, on the ways that you think NVC has enriched your life, so that people have something to anchor this to and don't think it's sort of a bit dippy, abstract stuff, but you claim that it's enriched your life. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Yes. You know, for me specifically, learning NVC was useful to do this process with myself. Because I was having problems with myself, and so learning those tools was important for me, first and foremost, for fixing the problems that I had with myself. And then the same tools, once I began to become more skillful in using them, I could put them to use for my interactions with other people also, and that's been very satisfying as well. So there is it's also possible to use that on our own person for the communication that we have going inside ourselves. Because moralistic judgment does not just apply to what other people are doing; it also applies to what ourselves we do. Do you agree with that?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm a lot. I cut other people a lot more slack than I cut myself. I'd have to say that.
Yeah.
So, would you like to give specific examples of ways that using NVC have improved your relationships, or is that too personal?
No, I'm perfectly happy to give examples. Like I said, the first example is my relationship with myself. I used to blame myself for having failed at this or that, you know? And at one point, I thought that I was so bad that I didn't deserve to live anymore. Or rather, I was so disgusted with myself that I thought of suicide. And if I had not at that time heard about NVC, I'm not sure, but it's possible that I would have put an end to my life. It's possible. It's difficult to
But
say for sure, but you know, maybe.
instead, you began to see yourself in terms of learning to gradually improve your conduct rather than judge yourself for past behavior.
Yes, hearing of this idea from NVC that it is possible to think of interactions between people in an other way than simply as people being good or bad. Thinking of these categories of needs and which one are being satisfied and not satisfied. That made me think, and I was able to make the shift away from thinking that I was bad for what I had done, and
Okay, and
that.
instead you try to improve rather than think of
Yes.
yourself as bad.
Yes.
What about in improving relationships with other people?
Then there was my mother, whom I also saw as somebody who was evil, bad, wrong, at least dangerous for my kids, because she was so irrational, you know, and did not listen to the arguments that I would give her. The arguments that I learned about on FDR, and I was worried about her ideas being transmitted to my kids and harming them, and learning to think instead of how people are at all times only trying to satisfy these various needs that they have, that it is not true to reality to think that someone is purely bad or evil or good for that matter, that it's more complex than that, and that as biological entities, we have evolved to have these systems in us that push us to behave in ways that promote our continued life. These are the needs. You know, we have the needs for physical well-being. We need to eat, to sleep, to drink, to breathe, and the other needs for connection, for nurture, for contributing to the world, for peace. We have all of these needs, and if we think.
But your belief is those needs, those altruistic needs, only come into play whilst people's more primal needs are met. And your contention is that sort of people who might seem quite aggressive are behaving that way because they're still perceiving themselves under threat.
Yes.
I think that's been understood but in this conversation.
Okay.
What I really want to find out is how much better is your relationship with your mother, and are you happy with your kids' safety around her now?
Right. Yes, I am now. And I took a roundabout way of saying this.
It's fine, Mark. I don't mind. I was just thinking about initiating the conversation.
Mm-hmm. The thinking of her as someone just like me, who is only trying to satisfy her fundamental human needs, rather than as somebody who is trying to hurt my kids or me or anyone else. That was what happened for me, and that allowed me to stop seeing her as an enemy, and make it possible for me to try to understand and be interested in what could be going on for her, you know, that she acts in this way. And that in turn allowed me to understand that from her point of view, she was trying to help and to do what she thought was the best she could do for me and for my kids. It's just that we didn't agree on what this best was, you know. But her intention was the same as mine, to be there for my two kids and for myself. It was only the way that was we were disagreeing on, the strategy.
And you were able to convince her of a strategy that you see as enriching to your kids' lives? You were got her to agree to change her strategy?
When just recognizing that we both, my mother and me, are interested in the same goal of doing what's best, what we can best do for these two kids. Just that is so important to me, that it makes me much more patient with the disagreement that I can have at times with how she wants to go about doing this for them.
So what does that look like in real life? Do you say, "Mom, I realize you're trying to help, but when you treat the kids in such and such a way, I think it has this outcome, and so I'd like you to do this instead." Is that roughly how it works? Would you like to exemplify?
That's very close to it. And, my kids now, they're 13 and 15 almost. So they're past the age, 10 years ago, where I was most afraid. Now it's much less of a concern for me, so that has helped as well. Now I trust that they themselves are able to take care of themselves, and they can interact with everybody, including my mother, and not be harmed by what happens. But yes, like you were saying, when I disagree with something that she's doing, I am able now to bring the subject up with her, knowing that her intention is not to harm, and she feels that I am really curious in understanding why she's doing what she's doing, and that I understand that she has the best of intentions, and that makes it much easier for her to understand my concern and my point of view also. And often we are able to find other solutions for each of us being satisfied that we're both satisfied with the discussion and with what we're doing after that.
Okay, great. Would you like to give any other examples or arguments in order to convince members of the board that NVC is worth a second look and worth actually playtesting in their lives?
Well, you know, I could give many more, but I think that on YouTube, for example, the videos that are available that Marshall Rosenberg or other NVC trainers have made available give a lot of examples.
Okay, so we could say, more importantly than even watching the videos, is the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And if people really want to find out if NVC is any good, the best thing they can do is step up and try it out. Pick up the book and give it a shot. And I could exemplify for my own life, but because I've been sort of quizzing you on this and mostly doing what I can to present the opposing case as eloquently as I can, I don't think it would be fair for me to do that. Although if board members are interested, I can talk about it more in future. And my only question is there any other questions you'd like to cover in this interview, either for yourself or for me? Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I am not thinking of anything else right now. How about you?
Well, I think it's been a good conversation, and I'd be very keen to share it.
Okay.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it too.